The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Emmy Award-winning sportscaster Len Berman. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish storyteller Jordan Hill and our expert on the international scene, Tom Price, plus our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom, l'shana tova, and chag sameach, a good nearly new year and a happy holiday of Sukkot to come. The overwhelming holy day of Yom Kippur was completed last night at sunset, and I hope that all of you have recovered from your fasting and the long day of prayer and introspection and repentance that the Day of Atonement entails. But in the Jewish fall calendar, there is no rest for the rabbi. The holiday of Sukkot begins just 4 days after the last blast of the shofar ends Ne'ilah. Still, it's nice to feel like you've done your moral and religious duty, tried to atone for your sins of the past year, and are ready for a year of blessing and goodness. At the beginning of the Ne'ilah service last night, we sang the lovely Sephardic piyut, the liturgical poem El Nora Alilah, a poem asking God to accept our prayers of return. Here's a jazzy version of it by cantor Ramon Tassat, complete with hand drum.
El Nora Alilah, El Nora Alilah, حمت لانو محيلة بشعادة نيلة إل نور قليلة إل نور قليلة حمت لانو محيلة بشعادة نيلة متي مسبار كرويم لحا عين نسيم ومسلدم محيلة بشعادة نيلة El nor alila, el nor alila, hamtilanu mahila, bishada naila, el nor alila, el nor alila, hamtilanu mahila, bishada naila.
El nora alila, from the concluding service of Yom Kippur Ne'ilah last night. At the end of Yom Kippur, after all the fasting and prayer is over and it's time to break the fast and celebrate, and on other celebratory festivals like Sukkot, the Feast of Booths, which is coming up this week, it's customary to sing the Kaddish Shalem, the full Kaddish, to an upbeat Hasidic melody. This is one of the best, first notated by Yankel Gottlieb in the 19th century, fun, bouncy, and sung with great emphasis here by my old friend growing up, cantor Chaim Frankel.
Yitgadal v'yitgadash Shemei Rabav V'yol mal divrach yirutei V'yamlich malchutei V'chayechom v'yomechom U'v'chayei dechol beit Yisrael Ba'agala u'vizman kariv Yeah.
the Hasidic Kaddish for the end of Yom Kippur last night and the beginning of Sukkot this coming Wednesday night. So now that we're really done with the High Holy Days, it's time to say, clear your throats, Chag Sameach, a happy upcoming festival of Sukkot. This is the holiday season par excellence for Jews, and if the High Holy Days weren't enough ritual and observance, the delightful and underrated festival of Sukkot, the Feast of Booths, begins this Wednesday night, continuing for 8 great days. The correct salutation on Sukkot is Chag Sameach, which means have a happy holiday. And officially speaking, no Jewish holiday is nearly as happy as Sukkot, which is known as Zman Simchatenu, the season of our joy in Jewish prayer and study. Sukkot is a wonderful festival, particularly well-suited to climates where you can spend it outdoors or most of it. On Sukkot, we Jews celebrate the fall harvest, build booths in the backyard, which we decorate with the local produce of fruits and vegetables, and demonstrate our gratitude to God for the pleasures of good food and the freedom to enjoy it. Sukkot, also known as Sukkot, also harkens back to the time when our ancestors traipsed about the Sinai wilderness for 40 years, living in temporary huts they built out of whatever was lying around. You know, if you were lost for 40 years, you'd get used to temporary housing, too. 3,200 years later, that is now, we still build temporary sukkahs to remember our experiences as a people. The idea is that you construct a temporary tabernacle, fancy word for hut, on your South 40 out of wood, PVC pipe, metal, plastic sheets, trellises, pretty much anything you can come up with that you think will last for a week. You cover it in greenery of some kind or another, palm fronds work well, so that most of the roof is covered, but you can still see stars through the spaces in the roof at night. It's fun, it's messy, and it annually proves the Jews are not necessarily experts at construction. I'm not saying there are no great Jewish builders, but most of us are not precisely Bob Vila or even Bob the Builder. You see, Jewish boys are raised to be doctors, not handymen. As Jackie Mason has noted, those of us who weren't bright enough to be doctors became lawyers. Complete failures became accountants. And those of us whose moms weren't really sure we were capable enough to tie our own shoes, we became rabbis. But no Jewish parent, and I mean none, expects her or his son to become a builder. And around Sukkot, Taka, it shows. Although I have to admit, some of my best friends and some of our best sponsors on Too Jewish are actually Jewish builders. And some of my best Jewish experiences do revolve around Sukkot, especially the process of designing and building a sukkah. I remember once building a sukkah on my mirpeset, my balcony in our apartment in Jerusalem when I was studying there. It was a tight fit, but we managed it. Interestingly, the palm fronds for the sukkah had to be collected from a central location in Jerusalem, required walking about 2 miles and schlepping them back, tied with string and carried between two guys, me one of them, for the whole of that way. Quite a sight. Dozens, no, hundreds of pairs of men carrying bundles of palm fronds suspended between them, walking through the streets of Jerusalem, headed home to build sukkahs. An experience absolutely unique to Israel. Sukkot is a celebration of nature and thanksgiving and hospitality. Admittedly, compared to Yom Kippur, it's kind of the sports section of Jewish holidays, a lovely, pleasant diversion. But there's nothing wrong with that, and a good deal that's really just right. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll find out from our guest, who is from the world of sports, Len Berman, why he wrote a book about the top baseball players of all time and left out the Jews. Find out why in a few moments on Too Jewish.
Everything you always wanted to know about Judaism but were afraid to ask. A Taste of Judaism celebrates its 10th anniversary year with a brand new family class and in new locations. Taste of Judaism is free and open to all, Jewish or not, and we feed you too. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz lead an open, interactive exploration of the history and practice of Judaism in 3 2-hour sessions on spirituality, values, and community. Classes are offered all over the Tucson area, and enrollment's easy. Just call 520-327-4501. Taste of Judaism is an exciting learning opportunity for anyone curious about Judaism or who wants to deepen their knowledge and gain understanding of Jewish culture, history, rituals, community, and practice. The class includes delicious tastes of traditional Jewish foods. The sessions are free, but you do need to pre-enroll by calling 327-4501. This year, Taste of Judaism is offering both daytime and evening classes in Central, Northwest, and East Tucson, while introducing the new Taste of Judaism family class held at Tucson Hebrew Academy. Adults enjoy a grown-up taste class with the rabbis, while kids have their own Taste of Judaism children's program with excellent THA teachers. It's a great learning opportunity for the whole family. Call Mila Anderson at 520-327-4501.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft, and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. You know, lots of people tell you how important breakfast is, but I think lunch is better. Look at it this way. When you go to lunch, you get to take a break from work. With breakfast, you're just taking a break from sleep. Another great thing about lunch, and this is important, Mama's Pizza is open for lunch, and we're not open for breakfast. So you can drop in at lunchtime and get a slice, a whole pie, or one of our delicious calzones. You can even get a piece of Mama's famous home-baked cheesecake for dessert. You can't do that at breakfast. Mama's has the perfect lunch atmosphere. We designed Mama's to be comfortable enough for a business meeting and casual enough for any group of friends. So try Mama's for your next lunch. Then, if you got any leftovers, save them for breakfast. Mama's Pizza, with four convenient locations, including our newest at Broadway and Houghton. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
We're delighted to welcome our guest to Two Jewish this morning, Len Berman, Emmy Award-winning sportscaster, best-selling author who's covered pretty much every major sports event in the world, multiple Super Bowls, World Series, and Olympics during a 40-year career in broadcasting, the creator of Spanning the World, a monthly collection of sports bloopers, which was a 20-year staple on NBC's Today Show. He's also the creator of Sports Fantasy, which aired on NBC and had regular viewers pitted against famous sports stars. Len Berman is the recipient of 8 Emmy Awards, 6-time winner of the New York Sportscaster of the Year. Has a number of kids' books out, The Greatest Moment in Sports, and his newest one, 25 Greatest Baseball Players of All Time. Although I believe somebody said that should be the 25 Greatest Non-Jewish Baseball Players of All Time after you left out Hank Greenberg and Sandy Koufax.
I know. I am so embarrassed, but it was a funny line that someone said to me, because I had a blue ribbon panel select who are the 25 greatest players of all time and how do you compare different eras. And Sandy Koufax got consideration but didn't get enough votes to make the final 25, and which shocked a lot of people. And then someone said, "Is Hank Greenberg there?" I said, "No, sorry." They said, "Okay, here's the new title of your book, the 25 greatest non-Jewish baseball players of all time." So that's how that came.
Who was on this panel?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I thought it was a pretty good panel. I wanted to have a couple of players from different eras. So I had Bernie Williams, the Yankee center fielder, recently retired. And I had Ralph Branca, the old Brooklyn Dodger, who's best known for yielding Bobby Thompson's historic home run. And Branca was a teammate of Sandy Koufax, and Ralph did vote for him. And the other panelists were journalists, such as the great Frank DeFord, and some other people in the media. And I also had Roland Hemond, who's a longtime baseball executive.
General manager of the White Sox, among other teams, Baltimore.
And he's now with the Arizona Diamondbacks.
That's
in
right.
Their front office. And the Baseball Hall of Fame recommended Roland because of his vast knowledge of baseball. Let me look to see if I could find out if he voted for Sandy Koufax on my little cheat sheet here.
I'm telling you.
And actually, he did not. So how do you figure?
You would think like another member of the tribe. Well, in any case, it's a great kid's book. You have a website, Len Berman's That's Sports, which is really terrific and refreshing look at sports. What's your favorite moment that you've ever broadcast?
It may very well be a Big East game I did back in the day. That when the Big East Conference first formed in basketball in 1979-80, I was their first television announcer. And there were some epic wars among Georgetown and Syracuse and St. John's. And there was one game at my alma mater, Syracuse, I particularly remember. And I'm broadcasting the game, and Syracuse trailed by at least 20 points, and they roared back in front of over 30,000 people and took the lead. And at the last second, a youngster by the name of Michael Jackson, just like the singer, but he was a freshman for Georgetown, he calmly sank a jump shot and won the game, and you never heard 30,000 people become so quiet, and it was just an amazing ending. That's one of many, but I've been fortunate to have been at so many events. I was actually at the Olympics in 2000 when this wrestler by the name of Rulon Gardner, he was a Greco-Roman wrestler, and he was one of the greatest upsets in the history of Olympics other than the Miracle on Ice. He beat a Russian who had not lost a wrestling match in Greco-Roman in 13 years. And it was my job to interview the winner. And I'm glad it was Rulon because I don't speak Russian very well. So I've had a couple of good ones.
We will talk much more with sportscaster Len Berman on Too Jewish when we come back in just a moment.
If your parents or loved ones are in need of advanced assisted living care, then you should know about Handmaker's Tynan Neighborhood. It's the only program of its type in Tucson, and is designed for seniors whose needs have exceeded the care available from other assisted living programs. Dorothy Ho is a resident at Handmaker, and she's very pleased with her living arrangements.
My apartment is very comfortable. It's kind of like home now. And everybody here is very pleasant, too.
Dorothy's daughter Gretchen's experience speaks volumes about Handmaker's approach to family and loved ones.
When she first came to Handmaker, I can honestly say that I felt as loved and cared for as my mother has stated recently that she feels she is loved and cared for here.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grand, and includes one and two bedroom suites, cozy studios with patios and balconies, along with a wonderfully caring staff.
I don't even consider them staff, they're friends.
Phone Handmaker today for your tour and consultation, 322-7035, or visit handmaker.org.
Hi, I'm Rabbi Sam Kohan of Temple Emmanuel. What does it mean to be Jewish? A lot of us struggle with that. A great writer named Edmund Flegg wrote, "I'm a Jew because Judaism demands no abdication of my mind. I am a Jew because Judaism requires the devotion of my heart. I'm a Jew because every place where people suffer, a Jew weeps. I'm a Jew because Judaism is the oldest and newest religion. I'm a Jew because for us the world is not completed. We are completing it." Come find out what being Jewish can mean for you this coming year. Join us at Temple Emmanuel as we seek meaning and purpose in our Jewish identities. Call 520-327-4501. Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Early Childhood Education Center, Religious School, Adult Education Academy, and more. Call 327-4501 for Temple Emmanuel. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading us from the website or at the Apple iTunes Store as a very popular Jewish podcast. Well, Sukkot's coming up Wednesday night, the Feast of Booths, lasting for 8 days of al fresco dining and offering thanks for God's generosity, giving us a world filled with blessing and goodness. My favorite Sukkot story involves my grandfather, my mom's side, my Zadie Lou, famous for never throwing out anything, ever. When he and my bubby Dora moved to California in 1948 or so, took along a multitude of glass jars filled with screws, bolts, nuts, and washers. And he took the chains you need to attach storm windows for the winter, not realizing that storm windows are not exactly a staple of life in Los Angeles. Anyway, one year, my Zadie Lou and my dad were putting up a sukkah in the backyard. Neither one was exactly a precise builder, but they both worked with great enthusiasm and hard. They had the sukkah pretty much built out of old plywood, scraps of 2x4, and leftover wooden crates. Wasn't much to see, really, but they were very proud of it. They were stepping back to admire it when they noticed it was not just a tabernacle, but an actual lean-to. And it was leaning all right, way over to the left. My Zadie Lou and my dad stood back sweating and looked at the sloping sukkah. Well, if we had some way to pull it back to the right, maybe it would be okay for sukkahs, my dad suggested. We could throw something over the apricot tree and then pull the sukkah straight. So my Zadie Lou said, I've got just the thing in the garage. He went in, rummaged around the garage full of glass jars of screws, bolts, and washers from the East Coast, found what he needed. Chains from the New Jersey storm windows that had traveled 3,000 miles to Southern California. And so my Zadie Lou and my dad slung the big chains over a branch of the apricot tree attached to the right side of the sukkah. My dad pulled on it, and the sukkah indeed lurched over to the right, but a little too far to be called straight. Oi, Zadie Lou said, maybe we throw the other chain over the left side of the sukkah, we'll straighten it out that way. And so the second storm window chain went over the apricot tree around the left side of the sukkah. My Zadie Lou pulled on that chain, and the sukkah pulled back left. Again, a little too far to be centered. So my dad went around and pulled on his window chain, and the makeshift sukkah moved right. My Zadie Lou pulled on his window chain, and the sukkah moved left, and back and forth and back and forth as they tried to even out their tabernacle. Back and forth went the sukkah seesaw. Meanwhile, my mom's mother, Bubby Dora, had come outside to watch the proceedings. She stood quietly, wiping her hands on her apron, hands on her hips then, viewing the spectacle. Finally, she spoke in Yiddish. Shalom Aleichem is gestorben vor der Zeit. The great Yiddish humorist Shalom Aleichem died too young. He only should have lived to see this. Well, nowadays we have many easier recipes for sukkah. First, start with a ramada. Add a couple of trellis walls, lightly cover with palm fronds, hang fruit and greeting cards, and enjoy while fresh. Can serve a family and guests for about a week. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart. Good morning, Guy. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov, Rabbi Cohen. Good morning.
Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach. Happy Sukkot and happy Simchat Torah.
Thank you, thank you. Happy Sukkot. It's Zman Simchatenu, the season of our joy. Tell us a little bit about how people celebrate Sukkot in Israel.
Well, Sukkot, I must admit, is my favorite holiday.
Mine too.
In Israel. We kind of, you know, when I was a kid, we were going out to the street, grabbing wood and building a sukkah ourselves. After building the sukkah, we would, like all the kids from the neighborhood, coming around and decorate, you know, putting some decorations around the sukkah. And then we were kind of sukkah hyping.
Sukkah hopping.
Sukkah hopping.
I like
yeah.
it.
Okay. We were going from one sukkah to another, visit friends and families and relatives. And it was great joy. And all places had a lot of good food and tasty food, you know, ethnic Israeli cooking and stuff, and a lot of candies. And as a father, I must admit that I love the most Simchat Torah. Because then this is the time when I take my son and my daughters. I have two daughters and one son. We go, and before coming here to Tucson, I lived in Yokneam. It's a small city, a small town, actually, at the northern part of Israel. So the mayor there have the Simchat Torah celebration at the center of the town, with all the temples and synagogues coming and bringing their Torah books. They have that, like 20 Torah books in the middle near the library. And all the community are surrounding those books together and singing songs. And it's really great joy eating apples, sweet apples, and having those flags of the Torah. It's really a great ceremony, and it's a great time.
I love it. You know, I should also note, don't a lot of Israelis get Sukkot as a vacation time from work? Is that still true?
Well, actually, in Israel, all the Jewish holidays are usually the formal vacations. All schools have vacations on all Jewish holidays. And Sukkot is a nice time, you know, to take your family out. Some drive to a lot to be at the Dead Sea, scuba dive, see great fish,
That's
dolphins.
What I used to do, a scuba dive on Sukkot.
Yeah, it's really fun. And there are many festivals going around all across Israel, some in Jerusalem, some in Tel Aviv, So it's really a good time, and the weather is great. The weather is really the best.
It's a perfect time for an outdoor festival. So Chag Sameach and a happy Sukkot, a happy Simchat Torah to come next week.
Chag Sameach, Simchat Torah Smicha, Chag Sukkot Sameach, and, well, have a great year.
Thanks. We'll talk next week, Guy. When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, from Two Jewish Storyteller Jordan Hill, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the outstanding restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant on the J-Bar. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Janos has been such a splendid restaurant now for a number of years. Not too many other places to go for that kind of meal, are there?
You know, less and less options all the time. That's one of the things that I'm proudest about. Great food, exquisitely prepared, terrific service, really personal. That's what we do. We prepare the best and bring it to you here in Tucson.
It's really fine dining, but with a special Southwestern local flavor.
Fine dining, Southwestern flavor, and really personal.
So if you want a special meal for yourselves, for guests, for anyone, what's the number to call, Janos?
615-6100. The website, janos.com. I know you like this, Rabbi. You can follow us on Facebook, too.
Thanks, Janos. I will look forward to seeing you there and anyone else who wants a great dining experience.
Rabbi, thank you.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Tom, if it's not too late, as of yesterday, Gemar Chatima Tova. Hope you had an easy fast on Yom Kippur.
Thank you.
We began speaking about India and the Jewish community of India last week. Diverse community, lots of different places, long history, not huge, but influential. Today's India is an emerging economic colossus, long-awaited, but maybe finally here. What are the geopolitical implications of that, and how do they affect, Israel?
Well, it's a very good question, and it gives me an unusually pleasant opportunity to tie in themes from our last two broadcasts. We talked 2 weeks ago, you might remember, about the changing geopolitical chessboard, where countries that used to be considered second tier are undertaking more and more important initiatives, either on their own or collectively with other countries of the same genre, countries that used to belong, for example, to the non-aligned movement. All right, so you have odd combinations like Brazil, Turkey, and India doing something together, or South Africa, China, and Peru, whatever it might be. And these combinations are beginning to be very effective. One reason, of course, being that India and China are both superpowers in their own right in terms of not only real or potential military strength, but their huge populations. I mean, each country is over 1 billion people. They have huge gross national products, maybe not yet per capita, but they're on their way. One of the most significant changes in India in the past 50 years has been the emergence of a sizable middle class. It's no longer mostly a subsistence economy. It's now an economy where, you know, people try to outdo each other in terms of what kind of cars they have, et cetera. So a significant global rivalry is emerging between India and China, struggling to be not only regional superpowers, but global powers. And each one plays a game on the international chessboard. Often it looks like China tends to make overtures towards more radical countries like Pakistan or Libya or whatever, whereas India tries to show its sort of good student former British colony side by making overtures towards more democratic countries like Israel. So India has some fairly important ties with Israel, including not only full diplomatic relations, but direct flights, lots of tourism and trade in each direction. And that is a counterweight towards whatever pullback there might have been on the part of China as it has moved closer to some of the more radical countries in the Arab world, and its relations with Israel have become a little bit more, I would say, diluted, not yet strained, but not maybe as close as they once were over the past few years. So there's a very interesting dynamic there that bears watching, and that is certainly in Israel's interest to maintain as good relations as possible with each of these potential superpowers, but certainly at the very least with one, if not with both.
You know, it's always interesting to me to see India is such a now a dynamic development center of software and high tech. Israel, of course, in exactly the same situation. So many people active, such a creative economy and high tech. Again, a natural connection.
Also, both centers for the diamond business, right, and quite a few other things that they have in common.
Tom, thanks. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bobby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Sukkot is the 8-day festival when we Jews build a temporary booth and eat meals in it to remember our ancestors' sojourn in the desert. So, in New York City, this can present a problem. A guy builds a sukkah on his fire escape in New York. His landlord is so irate he takes him to court and asks the judge to force him to remove the illegal structure. In court, the judge agrees with the landlord. "I understand you have no permit for this unauthorized structure," says the judge. "That's true, Your Honor," says the guy, "but it's a religious requirement." "That may very well be true, but the tabernacle structure must go," declares the judge, whose name is Feldman. "Mr. Goldberg, I ordered you to remove it within 10 days. Next case. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish just for you and for Sukkot. You should live and be well. We welcome our Too Jewish storyteller, Jordan Hill. Good morning, Jordan.
Good morning, Rabbi. So with Yom Kippur still fresh on our minds and all this teshuvah and repentance, I wanted to go back to that story last week. I told you what happened to the girl as she became the star in the sky, but what about that angel? The angel who succumbed to temptation, who grasped after that jewel and lost his wings? Well, there's a story collected in Tikkun Shofar that says that there was such an angel who had to repent, who wandered the world year after year after year, and his job was to find simply the most precious thing. This was how he would earn the right to return to heaven and regain his wings. And so he went everywhere. And one day he found himself on a battlefield where a wounded man who was lying there dying gave his last drop of water from his canteen to his fellow soldier who was dying as well. And as the sigh of relief from the thirst left that one soldier's mouth, the angel grabbed it and brought it towards God and said, "Perhaps this is the most precious thing?" And God said, "Well, that is precious, but there are things more precious than that." And so the angel continued his wanderings around the earth, looking everywhere, and one day he found himself in a hospital, and there he saw a doctor who had contracted a disease in her tireless efforts to help others, and she lay there, dying. And as she gave her final breath, the angel grasped it and brought it before God. And God said, "Indeed, that is precious. But there are things more precious than that." And so the angel returned to his wanderings. And he wandered all over earth until one day he happened to be in a small town. And there he saw a man lurking in the shadows with revenge painted all over his face, a sword in his hand, crouched down by a window of what was clearly his enemy's house. And as he peeked into the window, there he saw his enemy's wife putting to bed his enemy's child. There he heard her singing lullabies, and her voice reminded him of the songs his own mother used to sing to him. And feeling this, hearing this, he realized the humanity of his enemy, the humanity of himself. And dropping his sword to the ground, a tear of turning, of teshuvah, came to his eye, and he left the scene. But not before the angel could grab that tear and bring it before God. And God looked at this tear of repentance and said, "Yes, this is the most precious thing." And so at long last, the angel got his wings back, and with repentance, the angel returned to heaven.
Thanks, Jordan. We'll get another story next week. And now a word of Torah. This week we read a special selection from the Torah in honor of the upcoming holiday of Sukkot, which begins Wednesday night and lasts for 8 days. This season is an embarrassment of holiday riches for Jews, and the Torah reading, I should more properly say readings, reflect this. Sukkot is the great fall Thanksgiving festival, the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles, and we are commanded to remember the transitory nature of our ancestors' wanderings through the wilderness of Sinai, as well as the transitory nature of our own lives. In the season of the fall harvest, when we eat the first and best of the produce of the natural world, we take a week to demonstrate our gratitude for the necessities of life, food, shelter, and clothing. And in this week's portion, we receive the mitzvah to build a sukkah, a temporary tabernacle, designed to last just a week. We should eat in it and sleep in it, they tell us. We decorate it with the symbols of harvest, fruits and vegetables, and enjoy celebrating the goodness of the world that God has given us. It's a good lesson in appreciating what we have, appreciating the many good gifts that God has given us. Gratitude is an experience few of us maintain for long, but it is the essential source of so much that is profoundly religious and profoundly good. May it be for each of us a week dedicated to gratitude. Our guest this morning is the famous sportscaster Len Berman, multiple Emmy Award winner and the author of kids' books on sports, among other projects. He'll fill us in on the role of Jews in sports and sports casting when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israel has privately signed off on a proposed arms deal between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia at $60 billion, that's with a B. The deal includes 84 new F-15 fighter planes, nearly 200 Apache Black Hawk and Little Bird helicopters, and upgrades for 70 other fighter planes. Israeli defense firms could make tens of millions of dollars on the Saudi arms sale by manufacturing key components of the F-15s. Boy, it really is a brave new world. Israel making money selling U.S. military hardware to Saudi Arabia. Wow. U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton was in Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt last week for meetings and photo ops with Bibi Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, Mahmoud Abbas, President of the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority, and host Hosni Mubarak, President for Life of Egypt. The photos, at least, looked very nice. Lest you think that talking about peace would actually lead to peace spontaneously emerging between Palestinians and Israel, Palestinian rocket attacks on southern Israel from Gaza have increased dramatically from the opening of the peace talks. Each day brings its own gifts from the Palestinians. For example, two Qassam rockets and nine mortar shells were fired on southern Israel on Wednesday last. One rocket landed in an industrial zone near Ashkelon. No injuries or property damage from that one. Tuesday, Palestinian terrorists in Gaza fired a rocket-propelled grenade at Israeli soldiers guarding the border. None were injured, and they returned fire, killing one Palestinian and wounding four. Israel's Air Force reportedly, in retaliation, bombed targets in southern Gaza in the afternoon. Palestinian sources said at least one more Palestinian was killed. And prior to Wednesday, 10 rockets struck Israel since the eve of Rosh Hashanah, including one that landed between two daycare centers shortly before the children arrived. There are certainly many Palestinians who have exactly no desire for peace with Israel under any terms at any time. And speaking of people who may or may not desire peace, Avigdor Lieberman will become the first Israeli foreign minister to address the UN General Assembly. He is replacing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in speaking to the UN because of Netanyahu's commitments to the direct negotiations between Israel and the Palestinians. Avigdor Lieberman reportedly canceled a scheduled trip to Washington, including a meeting with Vice President Joe Biden, so that he could meet U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton in Jerusalem last week. The meeting with Secretary of State Clinton was arranged with Avigdor Lieberman after she requested having the opportunity to convince him to support peace talks. However, Lieberman last week said publicly that peace between Israel and the Palestinians will not be achieved in the next year or the next generation. This should make for an interesting address to the UN for Avigdor Lieberman. And Tennessee basketball coach Bruce Pearl, who has taken the Volunteers from irrelevance into one of the top collegiate basketball programs in the country, including their first number one ranking not too long ago, is in trouble. Bruce Pearl, proudly Jewish, one of the biggest supporters of the Maccabi games in Israel, admitted publicly on the second day of Rosh Hashanah that he had lied to investigators from the NCAA about alleged recruiting violations. Was kind of 10 days of repentance confessional time for Bruce Pearl, I suppose. Pearl coached the gold medal winning U.S. team at the 2009 Maccabi games in Tel Aviv. He is wildly popular in Tennessee and around the country and is very active in philanthropy. He lends out his office to the Hillel at the University of Tennessee for Torah study, and he belongs to and attends the conservative shul in Knoxville. But he has now been docked $1.5 million in salary over the next 5 years by his university and barred from recruiting off campus next year. NCAA sanctions may follow. Bruce Pearl's actual sins might seem minor to the casual observer. He made excessive phone calls to recruits and used unauthorized phones to do so, and then he lied about the infractions. However, critics remember that Pearl doesn't have much room for error. 20 years ago, as an assistant coach for Iowa State, he famously was the whistleblower who outed an assistant coach at the University of Illinois for trying to secure a recruit by offering him an SUV and cash. While some have called for his resignation, it appears that Bruce Pearl may weather this storm. And Harold Gould, a famous character actor, if such a thing exists, died at the age of 86 years old. You may remember him as Rhoda's father on The Mary Tyler Moore Show and Rhoda, and he had a wonderful turn in The Sting. You know, you probably have to see him to know him, but a great actor with an unbelievable resume. And that's the news of Jews around the world. We welcome back our guest this morning on Too Jewish, sportscaster Len Berman, a multi-Emmy award.
Can you be too Jewish?
You know, no, you can't be too Jewish. But
that's
some
very
people,
interesting.
Some people think so.
Yeah.
So did you ever feel too Jewish in sports?
You know, I'm not sure. There were some moments when I wondered. When I started as a sportscaster, my first job was a newscaster in Dayton, Ohio. Then I got a sports job in Boston. And a couple of months into my career in Boston, a gentleman wrote in the Globe that I was off to a slow start, which, you know, kind of came as a surprise to my wife and me, but that was his opinion that I wasn't doing very well. And he raised the question in the Boston Globe, was it because of my religion? You know, was Boston, such a Catholic town, ready to accept a Jewish sportscaster? And that really set off a storm. I mean, people were very upset by the column. I personally, I thought it was an interesting question. I always wondered how people viewed others who were on the air and if they viewed them through the prism of race and religion. But this guy got a lot of flack for suggesting that maybe Catholics didn't want to watch a Jewish sportscaster. But other than that, it's hard to really tell. I mean, Do you ever know if you didn't get a job because you were Jewish? I mean, you don't know.
I applied to be a minister once, and I think might have heard me in that.
There you go. But you never know. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of non-Jews that didn't get the same jobs I didn't get, so it's hard to tell. But that was one that was blatantly in newspaper print.
You went to Syracuse University, which is sort of sportscaster Bob Costas, Marv Albert, Mike Tirico. Why so many great sportscasters from one frozen university?
Well, the serious answer is that some went because others were there. It was all started by the great Marty Glickman. And you want to talk about anti-Semitism, Avery Brundage kicked him off the Olympic track team the day of the event. Didn't kick him off the team, but took him out of the event in the 1936 Olympics.
Right, because Hitler didn't want any Jewish competitors.
Well, Brundage made up a story that the Germans were hiding, great athletes, so they had to put Jesse Owens and others in the race, and the Americans won by a landslide in the relay, and they would have won it by the same landslide if Marty Glickman and Sam Stoller were running.
Right.
But Marty was the first from Syracuse, and others followed specifically because of Marty, such as Marv Albert. I think Dick Stockton and others, and Bob Costas, I know for sure, went to Syracuse because of the announcers. I never really went to be a sportscaster. I actually went to major in engineering, which didn't work out too well. I think the short answer is many of these sportscasters came from the New York area. At the time, not everyone went away to college. So you went away a short distance. Number two, Syracuse had sports teams that were, so it was interesting, and big time in football and basketball at the time. And it was easier to get on the air in Syracuse, New York, than it was in New York City. So that's the serious answer why I think Syracuse had so many sportscasters. The answer I like to give to groups of Syracuse alumni is there's one easy explanation why we all went to Syracuse is because none of us was smart enough to get into Cornell.
And you still wanted the whole experience of snow and ice.
Please. I mean, there's nothing, you don't see the sun in Syracuse, New York from October to April. That's why I was always amazed that Jim Boeheim was able to recruit basketball players from Southern California. I mean, my goodness, it's awful at Syracuse, New York for the weather. But I never minded the weather, and my wife, who I met at Syracuse, hated it. So I guess it all depended on your perspective.
So you went to college to go into engineering, and I'll ask the typical question. What did your parents think about you becoming a sportscaster?
Well, my father, the two-part answer, they wouldn't let me major in broadcasting when I was part-time. I went to the college station as a fun event when I was a freshman, and I said, gee, I really want to do this. And my dad wouldn't let me major in broadcasting, and his famous quote was, there's only one Walter Cronkite. And he didn't want to see me go into broadcasting. And I since, love to tell young broadcasters, yes, there was only one Walter Cronkite, but, you become yourself. You find your own niche, and I thought I found it. You mentioned my website. One of the niches I found was that I'm convinced that not everybody's a sports fan. The non-sports fan is intimidated into thinking he's in the minority because of so much sports out there. But in truth, I think there are more non-sports fans than sports fans. So what I've always tried to do in my career, be it on television or on my website, is deliver sports news for people who want to know what's going on. They want to join the conversation, but they're not fanatics. They don't watch ESPN 24 hours a day.
What's the funniest moment you've experienced in sports? I mean, having created a blooper, show for so long.
Well, the one that stands out and seems to get the most discussion is the horse that got bar mitzvahed. It was a lady.
I must have missed that. How did I miss that?
You're about to hear all about it.
All right.
Shari Scramstead is a lady in upstate New York near Monticello Raceway, and her horse that she owned turned 13 years old. So she decided to have a bar mitzvah for the horse and put a little yarmulke on the horse's head and a tallis, a prayer shawl around his neck, and read some prayers. And they played some Jewish music, had some cake, and drank some wine and called it a bar mitzvah. Okay, so I have the clip of this. And I was in Boca Raton, Florida, of course, of all places.
Of course.
I show the clip of video, and there's a rabbi in the audience. So now I'm a little bit nervous because, is this a little bit sacrilegious? And I asked the rabbi, is there anything that, did I do anything inappropriate? And the rabbi said, there's nothing in the liturgy that says you can't have rights for animals. You would know this. I don't know this.
That's true.
Says, no,
that's true.
nothing sacrilegious about a horse getting bar mitzvah. And the rabbi said this. I don't want to take credit for this. The rabbi said, I've been to a few bar mitzvahs in my day. This wasn't much of a bar mitzvah. And the rabbi said, quote, but it must have been one hell of a bris. There you have it.
The horse that got bar mitzvah. Well, you know, the videotape of the bris would have made a different kind of a video.
No, I don't think that would be. Maybe, I just had a bris for my first grandson.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, thank you. Very exciting.
Yes.
Yes, and we'll just cut out talking about that stuff now.
Okay.
Yeah. I have, by the way, heard about people having their dogs have a bark mitzvah, but that's...
Ooh. Wow.
Yeah.
So I guess it's all on the up and up. I guess it's kosher.
Yeah, apparently. You know, as long as you don't serve, I guess, horse or something. When you got into broadcasting, did you have aspirations? Do people going into broadcasting have specific ideas about who they want to be? Do they all want to be Vin Scully? Do they, you know, how does it work?
I don't know. My aspirations were kind of, I wanted to get to a major market news operation by a certain age and wanted to make a certain salary by a certain age. And I thought those were kind of aspirations. I had idols as sportscasters, and my three were Kurt Gowdy and Mel Allen and Howard Cosell. But I didn't necessarily want to be any of them, and I don't think I aspire to be a play-by-play guy. I don't know. That's a great question. But I think after I had that argument with my father, I think I aspired to be myself.
Which is probably a great aspiration in general. By the way, does anybody really try to be Howard Cosell?
Well, Howard, the people may not know, even though he became so controversial and a cartoon figure later in his career, he was the first sportscaster who actually said anything. But when he back in the 60s, sportscasters just gave scores. Howard came out and gave opinions. So when Muhammad Ali refused induction in the armed forces, Howard Cosell came out and said that's wrong to strip him of his heavyweight title. And he was the only one who came out and actually had opinions. That wasn't done on radio and television at the time. So that's why I considered him one of my idols.
Now sometimes it seems that what you mostly get are opinions, and sometimes
Whole line is blurred in news and sports, and the hard thing is to get the facts anymore,
right.
especially accurate facts, you know, because everything is, especially with the internet, there's so many false statements on there and false facts, and everyone wants to give an opinion. Now, just the facts, ma'am, is harder than ever in broadcasting.
So a final question, what's your favorite sport to broadcast?
I always enjoyed college basketball, and I did a little bit of everything. And maybe it's because it's fewer players and a big ball, and, you know, football's so hard, and baseball can plod along. I always thought college basketball with short bursts to me was fun, and so I'll go with that one. I did some boxing, too, which I thought was a lot of fun. But college hoops is good, you know, good spirit, especially when you have a big crowd and cheerleaders and bands, and it's good atmosphere.
I want to thank Len Berman for a great visit on Too Jewish. Go to his website, Len Berman's That's Sports, and get his kids' books. The latest one is the baseball book, 25 Greatest Baseball Players of All Time.
Yep. All non-Jewish.
All non-Jewish. You know, I'm telling you, we're going to have to fix that.
Okay. Next book.
Len, it's not too late. A happy and a healthy new year. Shana Tova.
Thanks. Same to you, Rabbi.
Take care. When we come back, we'll get next week's guest and have a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
Is there a such thing as kosher wine beyond Manischewitz that's actually good? Well, yes. Sample 6 fine wines which happen to be kosher at the Temple Emmanuel Women of Reform Judaism Beyond Manischewitz Kosher Wine Tasting. It happens on Sunday, September 26th at 3 p.m. 5 local chefs will pair their favorite recipes with kosher wines. Chefs will also give cooking and wine pairing tips for trying their recipes at home. Sample food offerings from Festiche Modern Eatery, 47 Scott, L Wine Bistro, Naked Food and Fitness, Shlomo and Vito's, and Sous Chef. Coffee tasting and sparkling cider will also be available. The event is a fundraiser for Jewish education and is sponsored by the Temple Emmanuel Women of Reform Judaism. Tickets are just $36 in advance or $42 at the door. Beyond Manischewitz on Sunday, September 26th at 3 p.m. will be held in the Temple Emmanuel Sukkah at 225 North Country Club Road, north of Broadway. For tickets or more information, contact Lori at 327-6722. That's 327-6722.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Rabbi Yitzchak Adlerstein, the Simon Wiesenthal Center Director for Interfaith Affairs. Our playout this morning comes from the choir of the Rabbinical Seminary in Budapest, Simchu Birushalayim, Rejoice Jerusalem, for the coming Festival of Sukkot starting Wednesday, the Zman Simchatenu, the Season of Rejoicing. My friends, have a Chag Sameach, a happy holiday of Sukkot, and may you and your family have a Shavua Tov, a good week and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.